In this study, we have seen that how this great scripture teaches us how to lead our life, facing various challenges, going through many conflicts, and reach the goal. The central idea always is that make our life successful, and the idea of success is attaining the goal. The purpose has to be fulfilled. The other things that come and go in life, they are of a temporary, of almost no importance. But the main thing is to realize, experience our goal, and that is the oneness, the divinity that pervades in and through the whole existence. We saw that how Lord Krishna makes Arjuna aware of this, and the discussion was going on about how one from this ordinary state of life can aspire gradually to reach that state. The theories are excellent, but if there is no practical possibility of attaining the goal, then those theories don't mean much. Many have come to that understanding of religion, an erroneous one, but quite prevalent, that those ideas, philosophical ideas, may be very nice to think about. They are good for table discussions, but when it comes to day-to-day life, they don't have much bearing anyway. What does it matter if I think of the world in this manner or that manner? I still have to cook my lunch, I still have to work to get money, I still have so many conflicts. But that is really not the case. The religion teaches us how to practically live life, how to make it attuned to our goal. And this process, as we saw last time, that it is called the process of yajna or sacrifice. In the third chapter, we have been discussing that how we move from one step to the next step. That the giving up of the first step is necessary for that. Like the moving on the ladder, we saw that example. That we have to give up the step that we are standing on to, in order to get to the higher one. If we refuse to do that, then we are stuck where we are. And therefore, the idea of renunciation, always some of it is people feel a bit scared about it. When the thought of renunciation is seen in the religious spiritual teachings, then people feel scared about it. But that is because of this ignorance, that renunciation doesn't mean you have to give up anything meaningful. You have to just get to the higher position and to give up the lower position for that. It is so simple. It is the very necessary, obvious condition of progress. It is, you can take it up in the with the analogy of journey also. Suppose I want to go to, say, California, whether here it is too cold, so let me go and enjoy the nice Florida or California weather. Now, if I decide not to travel, not to leave Providence, then it is not possible. Going there means leaving from here. So, for realization of truth, one has to give up sticking to untruth. Our life is just embroiled in many things which are not real, and we have to uplift our condition from that stage, and that is essentially called yajna, or the idea behind the sacrifice. That yes, one has to start it at where we are. Each person is at a different level physically, mentally, on the scale of the evolution of mind. All are not on the same level. And nobody needs to be despised, or nobody should have even the sense that I am not capable. It is for everybody, the ladder is there. Wherever you are on the ladder, move up, try to move up. It is all of us, we make mistakes, and mistakes are necessary in a way to teach us lessons. It is the mistakes are committed only by those who do something. They only those who do not commit any mistake who don't do a thing. So then it is easy not to make a mistake. When you do something for learning, you make mistakes. And how a child learns to walk, you see falls many times, that every fall teaches the child that, well, how he should put the step. After a while, that baby grows up, the walking becomes natural. Never a thought is given then whether that I used to fall when I was baby, I used to become so wobbly and fall while walking. Well, that falling has been a lesson for us. So it is like that. We should not be worried about that. Let us move forward. So wherever one is, the yajna, the sacrifice, takes the shape accordingly for that person. And the whole universe is actually based on that principle. Lord Krishna tells that, look Arjuna, this is how you are taught to lead your life in a meaningful way in this world. The whole universe is just weaved into this law of sacrifice. What is this we see in the world? We live by this principle. One way of putting it is give and take, or law of karma. That is another way of putting it. That as we sow, so we reap. So if we decide not to sow, a foolish farmer may be like that, that, oh, sowing means I am putting my seeds, giving away. No, I want to reap without sowing. That doesn't happen. The fellow will be just wasting the labors, wasting his nice land. So you have to sow. That means the seed has to be given there. You cannot say, I will save my seed. It is, you have to give it up. Then you get the crop. So, in our social relations, family relations, we see all these things that we have to give. We have to learn to willingly give. And as a result of that giving, we get. This is a cycle that you see, that process goes on in the universe. There is the creation, there is the destruction, this is going on. The destruction is a necessary aspect of creation. It is not that the only creation is real and it has to sustain, no. We see everything that comes up dies, goes away. It is not to be thought as in that manner that no, everything has to continue and last. It is the forms come and go. What remains is the essence. the inner reality that never changes, that never goes away, but the forms come and go. So this is the process that one has to follow throughout till one reaches the goal. And once one reaches the goal, then the process becomes now redundant. Then it becomes meaningless. Then one doesn't have to follow this principle because the job of that principle is done. You have boarded a flight to go from here to, say, Los Angeles. Now the flight has arrived there. Now don't sit in the aircraft. Now deboard. You have reached. Now the purpose of sitting in the aircraft is done. You don't have to go on sitting there for eternity. You have taken the air flight to arrive someplace. Now the flight has landed. It has come to the gate. Now come out. Now don't keep on sitting there. You don't need to do that. So this spiritual practice has led you to a place when it leads. Don't try to get out of the plane before it lands. You know, it will be suicidal. That is not to be done. Don't give it up thinking that I am beyond all law. And there are criterions, the criteria is there for that yes, when do you know that you have landed? Not just by your imaginary whims, but there are some definite criteria to decide that. So when that happens, then that law doesn't become applicable to the person. It is the law is while you are progressing, and that law is essential. This principle of spiritual practice is there for you. Evolve, give up and go from this level to the higher level. Keep on continuing. But there is an end to it. Many times in our social structure, and we use this phrase, continuous progress. We have been progressing continuously. We saw last time that the word progress itself becomes completely meaningless if there is no goal to it, no stop to it. What does it mean to progress? The word progress has any meaning only when there is a goal. When you go towards that goal, then that activity is called progress. Otherwise, how do you decide that whether it was progress or regress? The progress or regress, one needs a standard to judge it, that what change took place, whether it was a progressive change or a regressive change. And that is judged by how much, whether that was going towards the goal or away from the goal. And just as we judge it in the journey, that I have to say, reach California, and then if I am going towards in that direction, towards the west, I am making progress. If I am going in the opposite direction, then I am making regress. So, I don't know where to go, if there is no destination, then how to decide progress? Then all directions and all journey is fine. If there is no destination, then all roads lead to it, you know, whatever road you may take. There is no idea of progress there at all. The very word progress means that there is a goal. When you reach that goal, then there is no further progress. So last time we saw that Lord Krishna mentions that state. It's a very important verse here, that when does it happen? It is not that whimsically you decide that this is when it happens. It is in spiritual path. Many people come with so many funny ideas we get about it, that I saw some light here, or I saw some kind of a vibration here in the back. I saw my nose started vibrating in this way, as if they are the signs of spiritual progress. And we have many funny things. We feel something unusual happening is not the sign of spiritual progress. Even if you have high fever, the body starts trembling. There is no spiritual progress involved in it. You don't have to meditate, go for meditation there, you have to go for medication there. That is the course required for you. It is the spiritual practice leads to the goal, and that goal has been very beautifully given in that verse that we saw. It is the 17th verse in the 3rd chapter. Yastu atmaratireva syad atmatriptascha manavah atmanyeva cha santushtah tasya karyam na vidyate. He who does not but that person who delights only in the self, is satisfied with the self, is contented in the self alone, has no duties to perform. All others have duties to perform, and this person has no duty to perform. Why so? Well, when you see the self, same self everywhere, you are satisfied with it. Atmarati. I compare it with our idea of rati means getting pleasure. Our pleasure is in some object outside. We seek pleasure outside. If I get more money, I will get more pleasure. If I have this with me, then I will have pleasure. Our pleasure is sought from external persons or things. If I get this boy or this girl, I will be very happy. The pleasure is superimposed there, where it is not. We try to derive pleasure from those things, and thus we get more and more entangled into them, more and more slavish becomes our life. Now, this person not only has understood that the self alone is the source of all happiness, he has now experienced it. So therefore, doesn't go to get pleasures from the objects. That is not at all there. This is the criterion. If a person is not seeking pleasure from anything outside, but is happy, then next word is atripta, that is contented, completely contented. There is no discontentment. There is a state which appears like that. After last class, during the class, but one gentleman asked this question later, that what about a person who is not having any desire because of excessive ignorance? That word, a Sanskrit word, is called tamas. That because of excessive ignorance, this person is just lazy, doesn't seem to be active. And what is the difference between that lazy person who is not seeking anything? Like a wall doesn't seek anything. That person is like a stone. This person, after so much of spiritual practice, if we are going to be non-distinguishable from the wall, then nobody wants that kind of life, I am sure. That why should I become inactive or inert like the wall, which doesn't seek anything, which doesn't mind anything, and which doesn't is always looks contented, howsoever it is. You feel that we should paint it or whatever. The wall doesn't have those feelings. So the wall, should I become like a wall? There are people like that, who are so dull, so lazy, that they don't seem to have any kind of desire or drive that other people go by. The reason there is not arriving at fulfillment, but so many desires are there that they all jam the traffic. Just as there is no movement of cars if there is no cars on the road, and again no movement if they are all gridlocked and jammed. So, like our Vishwanath, when I was, they were traveling from New York to Providence, and because of the heavy traffic and something happened on the road, and the road had become a parking lot. So I had called him, where are you and who is driving? He said, at present no one is driving. All are sitting there. Not because there were, it was no road there, or because it was all gridlocked, and they wanted to go, but because of that condition, they could not go. So this person also has so many conflicting desires that they all kind of get locked into each other. And thus this person doesn't do anything. This state is exactly opposite to the state of illumination. And this is where illumination is far, far away. It is better that this person starts doing something. Even if this person is going to commit murder or some other, it is better than being inert. Let him do some evil actions. At least that fellow will be active. And just to give you an example, in Karma Yoga, Swami Vivekananda has given that example, that a young man came to him to lead a monastic life. He said, I want to lead a monastic life. And Swamiji saw that he is very lazy, full of that inertness. Many come to become monks like that, thinking that if you become monk, then you don't have to work, you get your food without working. So it is very nice state, you know, that otherwise I have to work hard 40 hours a week and then keep on worrying about many things. If you become a monk, it is so nice. No worry about earning your livelihood. See how nice this Swami is, has a nice place to live in, and doesn't need to do any work. That kind of giving a class, just blabbering, anybody can do that. It is. So, it is so easy, nice to become a Swami. So many come with that idea, that then I don't have to worry about raising the family, I don't have to do any of these things in the society, I don't have to earn money. Very nice. So with that idea many came there, many keep on coming. After a few days they immediately bid goodbye. A gentleman came to Swamiji and Swamiji asked him, well, my brother, do you know how to tell lies? No, I don't know how to tell lies. Do you know how to steal? No. Then first learn how to tell lies, first learn how to steal, then come. Because he is not telling lies, not out of any moral consideration, but that much mental activity is not there. No, the truth automatically comes. It is For telling lies, you have to do some mental activities. That activity is not there. That is why that person was not telling lie. I am not advocating that now we all should start. It is not for us. Don't take it, understand me wrong, that otherwise our bow will start telling lies, saying that, well, Swami in the class told us that we should start by telling lies. No bow. So it is, as Swami said there also in the Karma Yoga book, that I was joking. But unless we are active, there is no possibility of getting to that state of supreme inactivity. So that is the state then, why you become now inactive? All joy has been discovered. And this person is the happiest person. Doesn't need to try to get happiness from this man or that woman or this thing. You don't need a candy to make you happy there. It is our ordinary life. If I don't get a candy, then I feel I am not happy. I have to go for candy. Or the candies take different shapes, that's all. But they are like candies. So this person's joy and satisfaction is completely independent of that. And so, it is, then Atmani Evacha Santushtaha, that there is this person who is completely satisfied, completely happy. Tushta, the word tushta in Sanskrit means happiness. Santushta means the culmination, highest happiness. This person is he becomes happiness. There is a very beautiful passage in Taittiriya Upanishad, same comes in Brihadaranyaka Upanishad also, that how much is the happiness of a person who has seen the truth. The one who has realized the truth, it is said that that person attains highest happiness. So you want to actually measure it. It is our modern scientific people, those days also they were there. They thought that let us measure it. Only saying that it is maximum, let us have a comparison. So, a person, a student of some university might have been there, that Brown University, very good, sharp students. So, they wanted to take a measure, you know, that how much this joy of this person is. So, they took up a unit. For measuring, you need a yardstick. A unit is necessary for measuring. So, this person took the unit of the maximum joy that one can get as a human being. That unit means, suppose a young man or you can say woman, it is with all the senses very powerful. Such a person, bubbling with all energy, very healthy, and that person is given this whole earth with everything in it for enjoyment. That is the unit, you know. Now, this, imagine our little joy of quarreling for a quarter, you see. That is, in that comparison, these joys also are very small. But this is the starting unit to measure the joy of the illumined. And then it is said that this, when you measure 100 of these, one human joy, that was called one human joy, when a young human being with all health, powerful sense organs is given the whole earth for enjoyment. That is one human joy. When you make 100 times that, then you get at a higher level. That is called next, that is Gandharvanam Anandaha. In the those ethereal beings, and they have very fine senses. So we can, by our musical joy, we can have hear only 12 notes. Finer ears can distinguish, say, up to 36 notes. In Indian music, there are 36 different notes. They are called Shrutis. So 36 finer notes are there. But that's about it. Suppose our hearing instrument is made more finer, all our senses are made finer, that's we can hear 500 notes. What a great musical joy then we can derive from there. And of course, corresponding music also. The one who doesn't have an understanding of music doesn't get bothered or doesn't have the suffering also. The joy increases, suffering also increases. A person with a real good musical ear enjoys the music and also suffers if there is all bad, wrong notes are played and the rhythms are off and all, that suffering also comes. One of my friends was very happy because there was no understanding of music at all in him. So when he said that, "Hey, you people, so just teach me some little music, how to play this organ." So I started telling him that, "Look, this is do re mi fa," and then after hearing two or three times, "I don't understand any difference in this," he said. "It is all pan." Said, "Okay, enough." So now this person is missing the joy of music, but also missing the suffering also. If there is those who have musical ears, so they suffer also if the music is not proper, if the rhythms are off, if somebody is singing out of tune, then this person has neither the joy and so no suffering either. So when the senses get finer, you get higher joy 100 times. Then that is made a unit. Like when you have to measure small distances, you measure in inches. But when you want to measure the distance between here and Florida, you don't measure it in inches, you use miles. If you want to measure the distances between galaxies, then you use light years. So you use bigger units. So when they found that this 100 units comes up to this, then that 100 times that joy was made a unit, and then found that 100 times of that will make the joy of a being in that higher heaven excellent, and then higher than that will become that. And they went on measuring like that, and they found all this joy is already contained in this knower of truth. All these joys are already with the person who is desireless because of the knowledge of the truth. All joys are already there. Then how much joy he has? Now the Upanishad winks a little. See, he said that the sages say that your measurement is not going to work here, because you have been measuring only the shadows of joy, not the real joy at all. The joys that we have in the world, they are not really joys. They are the shadows of joy. They come and go. And so you cannot measure the real joy by those standards. This person has become happiness, doesn't need to get happiness. Our happiness is an object, that I get happiness. It is an object and so always limited and always accompanied with corresponding sorrow too. This person has become joy. How can you give the idea of how many pictures of banana will make one banana? Well, the pictures, you can't eat pictures. You may bring 100 pictures, 1,000 pictures. None of them will be able to satiate your hunger. Banana is a different thing. So it is like that. The real, this person gets real joy, becomes real joy. So that is the stage where now all spiritual practice stops. This person, therefore, now, in the, as described in the next verse, naiva tasya krite narto na krite neha kaschana na chasya sarva bhuteshu kaschidarthavyapashrayah. He has nothing to gain by action or lose by inaction in this world, nor does he depend on any being for attaining his purpose. He has no duties because he has no expectations from anybody in the world. That doesn't mean he doesn't work, but now there is no other purpose but to help others. He has achieved everything. He has no dependence on anything. So therefore he has no duty left here. The person is completely free. So, there is no that sense of duty there. It is very difficult for people to imagine that idea, that state, that how a person can be like this. And I get so many questions on that, that don't you think that this person must do some good to the society? Well, our idea of good to the society is very limited. Is the other day one gentleman was asking me about if that person is not giving speeches, then how can people get the knowledge? Then I told, well, giving speeches is not the only way of doing good to the people. It may do good to the people or may not do good to the people. And this person has no such qualms about that, can talk or cannot, need not talk, need not do anything. Just the presence of that person will bring lot of good to the world. Our ideas of good are so limited that if there is enough food for everyone, then there is good to the world. What about the what we consider as food? What about that? Like if you have a lot of chicken, so that everybody will get it. Think about the chicken, what will happen to it? You kill so many chickens. Are they happy? Is it doing good to them? Think about that. Our idea of doing good to the world is so limited. Only me. My nearby people, they good, the whole world is good, everything in the universe is good. It is the good to the world is far bigger than what we think. We look just a little part of it and think that that is good, like that it is mentioned in that sarcastic example that the ship was sinking and this man prayed to God. Oh Lord, save me and my wife Mary, my son John and his wife, whatever her name. It is us four and no more. So if we four are saved, that is the God should be just for that. Us four and no more. So our idea of doing good to the world is so limited. It is, and it is so conflicting with the ideas of good for the other people that we become so fanatic. Instead of doing good to the world, we bring lot of harm also. communist idea of doing good to the world is one idea, and it did good to some, it didn't do good to everyone. The capitalist model of doing good to everyone did good to some, didn't do good to everyone, cannot. So, doing good to the world is not so simple. So, this person does good to the world in a much higher sense. So, when one comes to this stage, then no duty. Then that person has no law. And it's only the bound, they have laws. And those who are free, they don't have any law. If you can tell that person, hey, you must do like that. You are free, so you must do like that. What does it mean? That person is not free. If that person is free, is not under your thumb. It is. So, in that state, then there is the perfection is achieved. There is no further progress in principle possible, because there are no two. There is nothing higher, so there is no further progress possible. So, this is the culmination of progress. The goal is achieved. You have become that truth. Now you are everywhere. And you are now not limited by a body. You are everywhere. You are everything. It is in that state alone this is possible. Then, how do you get there? Again, he comes back, Lord Krishna, again comes back that, well, Arjuna, you are not there. So, you have to follow the path. And what is that path? Tasmad, therefore, he says, Tasmad asakta satatam karyam karma samachara. 19th verse. Asakto yacharan karma paramapnoti purushah. Therefore, always perform action which has to be done unattached. Verily, man attains the highest by performing action unattached. One has to learn this technique that doing our duties without any attachment. In this, what is this non-attachment? Again, one should understand that does not mean not loving. Our understanding is so clumsy about that we consider not attachment means not love. In fact, it is the opposite. Our attachment correspondingly reduces our love. It is when we want to detach, then what happens through that detachment? Detachment makes us love more, because we are not seeking anything for ourselves. Our attachment means considering something as mine. This is mine and that is not mine. And whatever you feel as mine, you feel a sense of right, a sense of authority over that. And by mistake we start calling it as love. This is my wife and this is my husband. So you start dictating, you start making demands on that. This is my son, I should behave like that. It is some time back, a couple of years back, one gentleman had come to see me, all big frustration writ on his face, elderly person, and quite nice otherwise, very active. He came and started making complaints about his son. You see, I spent so much of my time, my energy, my money in rearing up my son. Now, myself and my wife, we did so much for him. Now, should he not feel obliged? Should he not have the sense to would take care of us. Should he not have that sense to acknowledge his debt to us? I said, tell me, you did it out of love or out of expectation that he will do like this? If you did it out of expectation, then you were just making investment. You know, like you invest in the bank, you were. It was just a commerce. If you had done it out of expectation that you were doing it as a matter of commerce, and then the returns depend, you know, the laws of commerce become applicable there, not law of love. It is the law of love. If you have done it without expectation, then you wouldn't feel this kind of frustration. Tell me what bad your son does to you. Does he, in your need, does he not give you money? I said, no, actually I don't need any money. Then what do you need that he should be doing for you? No, he doesn't come many times to see me and say hello and all that. So why should you care for that? Is it that necessary that he should make a phone call every day and come to see you every day? And even if he does that, are you going to feel satisfied? The problem, I said, is, see, yours. You got attached and therefore you are feeling the suffering of it. You got entangled. While you thought that you were doing your duty, really what happened was you got entangled into it, and thus now you are suffering because of that. So don't get entangled into it. Let your son decide what is right for him. Who gave you the power to decide what he should do? And let him judge what he should do. You don't have to judge that what he is going should do and what he should not do. It is if, but we get entangled, we take the responsibility of deciding right and wrong, not for us, but for everybody in the world, that he should do like that and she should do like that. It is not out of love, but this out of attachment. The attachment makes us get bound in this world, and our sphere becomes smaller and smaller. Our whole action becomes so constrained to just one point, I, constantly thinking of I. I am so and so, this person does wrong to me, I did good to that person, but now doesn't do. This brings so much of suffering. It is good that I had told many times to forget two things, remember two things. I heard it from a very saintly person, that forget two things. Which two things to forget? What good you did to somebody else. Never think about it again. If you think about it, those expectations will come. Oh, I did good to him. I gave that day. You know, he didn't have a quarter to put in the that parking this thing machine. So I gave him a quarter. You will remember it till the end of your life. And thus, this idea that I helped somebody, it keeps on bothering us. It is good to get rid of that burden. What that person got was what that person deserved. If you wouldn't have given, somebody else would have given. If that person deserved, that person will get it. You became maybe just the mailman. Just that the mailman brings you something that you were going to get. It was not that the mailman made a check from his account and brought it to you. Somebody had sent that check to you, and the mailman brought it to your door. And similarly, a bill also, the mailman just brought it to you. You did not, the mailman is neither to be given credit or blame for that. So whatever we get in life, it is out of just our karma, what we deserve. So that person is not, when you have done good to that person, that person just deserved that. You became an instrument. Don't take any credit to you for doing good to anyone. If you do that, then you get entangled. You know, yes, you see, I helped him so much at that time. And now, this person doesn't even look at me. Is it right? Why you get so much of suffering? You did good, very good, forget. That is the good thing about that, that forget it. So this is to be thrown out of one's memory, delete, you know. Whenever such thought comes in the computer, you have a delete button, press the delete button there. This thought, delete, gone. And another thing is to be deleted from our this machine, and that is what bad somebody did to you. Again, the same mailman principle, you deserved that, so you got it. See that fellow, always is like that, and you know, he said like that to me. What right he had got to say? Forget, you know, why you want to get further bothered by it? That man might have said to you, and that might have hurt you. Now, why you want to hurt yourself more and more and more by thinking about it again and again and again? Don't give a thought, don't hurt yourself more. These two things keep on hurting us. What good I did to that person, and what bad the other person did to me. So, delete. And what is to be remembered, what needs to be saved, the files are to be deleted, so these two files, the two other files are to be carefully saved. That is the awareness that everything is going to vanish here. Nothing is permanent. Everything will go away. Death is certain. Let us keep that knowledge with us. Death is certain. Every being born has to die. And there is no... don't try to cling to this dying body. The body, the very... it is a process. You know? The chemical actions are taking place all the time, and that is what we call body. It is not I. That it is going to culminate someday, that degeneration will be complete. So, death is certain. One has to know that for sure. And it is not easy to remember that. If we remember that, see how calm we become. It is to, when we remember that death is certain, that brings tremendous calmness in life. Death is certain. So, that fear of death gradually goes away. Death is certain. When you know that something is sure to come, then you are not worried about it. It is only when you do not know, and we try to delete this thought. Whenever it comes about death, inauspicious. What is inauspicious about that? The most certain thing in life is death. Other things are, whether they come or go, nobody knows when and how. But death is certain. So remember death. And remember that which does not die. Our true nature, the divine in us, that does not die, that is unborn. We are really that, and that knowledge is to be preserved. So two things to forget, two things to remember. So we shall continue the study that we have to therefore keep on acting in a detached way. Practice of detachment is the secret of success in spiritual life. We shall discuss that more in the next class. Next Friday, again, we shall assemble for it.